Hey there, we at Blue Wire wanted to thank you for your continued support of this podcast. With over 90 podcasts across our network, we are committed to bringing you great content to fill that sports-shaped hole in your heart. To find more Blue Wire pods, search for us on iTunes or check out BlueWirePods.com. And remember, one day sports will return and it will be glorious. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
What is crack-a-lackin', Hardwood Knox listeners? I am Dan Favalli coming at you once again without Andrew D. Bailey. I am, however, as usual, as ever, super excited to be joined by founder and editor-in-chief of NBA Math, plus an editor for Bleacher Report, Adam Frommel. We are going to continue our decade player ranking series that we've been rolling through. We are on to the Denver Nuggets. Before we get started, just the usual housekeeping notes. Please remember to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes, especially if you've enjoyed this series or are just checking us out because you want to see where your team falls and how their players shake out in this exercise, or if you just want to hear my MacBook give me iMessage alerts. We appreciate any ratings, reviews, and subscriptions that we get as the result of this. Please keep them going. We can also be found wherever else you consume your podcast, be it Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, whatever. Follow us on Twitter at Hardwood Knox. You can also and should also subscribe to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com, search Hardwood Knox. Just subscribe to us, like our videos. There is a playlist with all of our decade player rankings on there. There's also a landing page on the NBA Math website, so check that out as well. All these team player rankings in one convenient location. Last but certainly not least, or actually second to last but certainly not least, shout out to our sponsor for making this podcast possible, like always, betonline.ag. Be on the lookout for their promo code coming to you shortly, and we thank them as always. And finally, I meant to do this on one of the previous podcasts that we recorded, but I forgot. Just wanted to give a shout-out to anyone who was impacted by the furloughs or layoffs at Vox Media. It's a shitty time for everyone. The media industry has been hitting hard, but specifically over at SB Nation, there are some of the most creative writers out there in the sports world, and it sucks to see so many of them being furloughed or laid off. I hope that they're able to go back to SB Nation once this is all over, if it's ever all over, or that they land into better gigs with companies that appreciate them more than Vox Media. And also condolences to Karl Anthony Towns and his family because his mother passed away from COVID. That was something else that I meant to mention on the previous podcast, so just playing catch up there and sending good vibes his way and his family's way as well. Whew, deep breath. Adam, how are you doing? I told you I wasn't going to ask you how you were doing this podcast, but here I am, caring about your well-being. How are you doing?
I appreciate that. I'm pretty well, and you know, there's one thing that's bugging me, and it's that you have these two adorable puppies, Wade and Thor, and I don't get enough pictures of them, and I definitely don't think that the Hardwood Knox account has sent enough pictures of them. I feel like we need to make them internet famous here because they're adorable. And my life would be better if they were in it more.
You just need to message them and tell them to sit still for long enough to have said photos taken. And I also blame you for allowing me to get two puppies. That was like pandemic brain, where I was just like, I need more joy in my life. We're already getting one. Let's just get two. And they're adorable, but they're also hellraisers, and I am tired. Respect to anyone who has actual human being children and still finds a way to get stuff done, because I'm overmatched. It's me versus two puppies. One of whom is sleeping right next to me as we record this. You saw him before he was sleeping. Me versus two puppies, and I'm losing. I don't know how you have a kid. You have Davey. I don't know how people have multiple kids and get stuff done. I don't know how they do it. Respect to them.
It's a struggle every day, but yeah, the puppies are always going to win. Just you might as well accept that now.
I just
The puppies are going to make the all-decade team before you do.
That's, I just, look, as long as I get to sleep at some point, they can make whatever team you want them to. We do have a Denver Nuggets all-decade. Well, it's not an all-decade team. The top 10 players of the decade for the Denver Nuggets. Thank you to everyone who voted on their top 10 Nuggets of the decade. I say we get right into it. We had a tie for 10th place in Denver. A lot of tough options here. Who did we end up with in the composite rankings, Adam?
Yeah, this was an interesting one just because it felt like for the first time with any of the franchises we've covered thus far that there was a plethora of options that were actually compelling ones for those down ballot spots. So we did have a two-way tie between Carmelo Anthony and Aron Aflalo. We both had Aflalo in our 10th spot. The fan vote did not have him in the top 10. It did have Carmelo Anthony at number 9, which is why he got in on the composite grades, even though neither of us had him. I think the reason we didn't is pretty obvious here. It's that we're only looking at 2010-11 through the present day, which means that we only get 50 games of Melo in a Nuggets uniform before he was sent to the New York Knicks in that blockbuster trade that brought back Danilo Gallinari, among others. So it was just far too small a sample, even though he played pretty effective basketball during that 50-game stretch, was obviously still in his prime as a 26-year-old. But for me, Aflalo, who just spent significantly more time in a Nuggets uniform, was the obvious choice over him.
Yeah, do you remember lockout season Aron Aflalo? Just an absolute offensive monster. And he had a good year after that, but he was with the Magic for it. He was the centerpiece of the 2012 Dwight Howard-Andrew Bynum trade, Iguodala trade. I think we can all agree Aron Aflalo was the centerpiece of that.
Without question.
Yeah. Just a solid, for those three seasons, and again, two of them were with the Magic, but just this really solid, high-value bucket getter, hitting a, with the exception, looking at the Denver season specifically, he does have three seasons that fall under this purview, but 2011-2012, hits 50% of his twos, shoots almost 40% from three, averages over 15 points per game, a nice little secondary playmaker. And there were just, in those post-Melo days, those immediate post-Melo days, like there were just stretches where he had to be, for certain lineups, the primary scorer. And I won't say it was, you know, always generated the prettiest results, but he was someone who could do it, like sort of like that Bojan Bogdanovic guy, who's definitely had a more sustained peak when you look at his career and is probably the better player overall, but was just someone that you could rely on, who wasn't a star, who really probably shouldn't even have been a number two on a really good team, but he could get you buckets off the catch, he could get you buckets in the post just from scratch in general. And I'm happy that the fans appreciated him just about, or no, I'm happy that you appreciated him instead of the fans as much as I did for this ranking.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely not somebody that you ever really wanted to be a star, but you could kind of pigeonhole him into that role and live with the results. Like a capable, maybe not an exceptional three-level scorer, a guy who can get buckets from the mid-range, who can shoot threes, who can create from himself, who can play off the ball, never at a very high level, but he did it well enough to get a shout out from Kendrick Lamar. And I think that matters more than anything else here.
Honestly, we need to bump him up five spots for that, probably.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
Melo, for me, by the way, just didn't make the cut. 50 games is just nothing.
Yeah, he wasn't even close for me.
It feels like for the fans, it was just a matter of, you know, Melo played for them and was really good in this decade. And so we have to throw his name in there.
I think it's sometimes hard without like really poring over the archives and stuff to remember exactly when players changed hands and whether they had three seasons within the cutoff or two seasons, or in this case, 50 games. So I'll excuse it because he did at least play for the Nuggets during this decade, unlike Allen Iverson, who did get 1/6th place vote despite retiring before the start of the decade.
Or maybe this is galaxy brain thinking here, but are fans just next level smarter than us and they're rewarding Melo for the return that he got them in the trade where he forces his way to the Knicks. I think about how many players are on this list as the direct result of this trade that we're going to get to in a few moments.
Right. I mean, without Melo asking for that trade and getting it, they don't get Jokic down the road.
Yeah. So
you can connect all of the dots back to Melo.
Really? He was snubbed then. I don't know what we were thinking.
Yeah. We should have had him much higher.
Who is at number 9?
At number 9, we have a current Denver Nugget, and that is Paul Millsap, who was a big free agent addition for the Nuggets back in 2017.
Is he's been there for free agent addition in franchise history?
I would probably say so, yeah. Okay. I think, a four-time All-Star, still in his early 30s as kind of like what was intended to be that finishing touch on a contending piece, on a contending puzzle. I think he probably was.
I would agree with you. I was always just curious.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been here for two seasons and change. I say here because I'm in Denver, so I'm allowed to say that. I realized that was a little bit of a slip. But, another guy, like much like Aflalo, where he doesn't necessarily like stand out in any one area at this stage of his career, the stage that's been spent in Denver, but like an exceptional defender, a guy who still gets countless defenders to bite for his pump fake and is able to score from all over the court, a guy who can capably serve as more of a tertiary playmaker when sets break down in the half court. Is he an all-star anymore? No. Is he a defensive player of the year candidate anymore? Not really, but like just good in all areas.
And just with the exception of probably the beginning of his time in Denver and in that first season, he ends up missing most of the year too. So that's definitely a part of it. There was times where he felt like he deviated from the offense to look for his own shots. Maybe that's just the byproduct of not having enough reps because of all the time he missed or just trying to get comfortable. He's fitting quite well, though, otherwise. And I think you have to respect someone who, you know, he's never been the highest you should start to begin with, but his role is clearly diminished from what it was when he was coming over from Atlanta. And I respect guys like him who can make that transition, I won't say seamlessly, but in time effectively. And even now, his availability can still be an issue. But when he's on the court, the Nuggets are very clearly an above-average defensive team. And so, no, he's not going to have that same profile that he did during his years in Atlanta. That part of that is age, but he's still just so functionally effective and valuable that if you're rank all the current players in the NBA, his volume probably keeps him out of the top 50, but he's also probably still right around there. And that's, you know, looking at what's happened over the past 3 years, I think that that's actually super impressive.
Yeah, I think he's also just held back a little bit because of the injuries. You know, like we had the first season in Denver, only 38 games played. Then he missed 12 last year, and he's managed to stay mostly healthy this year. But you know, those minor and more major injuries have piled up a little bit, and especially during that first season where the integration process with him and with Nikola Jokic and with Jamal Murray, it kind of got held back because they were so new into his tenure there when he went down. That he hasn't, I hesitate to say he hasn't lived up to his potential or the free agent signing. Like, he might not have provided as much value as expected because of that.
I also will say he's one of those guys that I've always wished would take more three-pointers. I know he's had some choppy three-point splits when you look at
his percentages. Yeah, but you wish that about everyone.
That's also fair, too. I want everyone to take more threes. 44% from three this year, just only 3.7 attempts per 36 minutes. Who do we have next? Is this another tie spot? We had a few ties here.
No, we don't. So we have alone in eighth place, we have Wilson Chandler, who was eighth for both of us and who was 10th for the fans. I think this is the first time we really get to bring up the fairness concept that we talk about in every one of these episodes, because Wilson Chandler is third in minutes played over the last decade for Denver. And he was more than just there, you know, a capable 3-and-D guy who kind of embodied what we've come to appreciate about tweeners in this modern era, where, you know, 6'8", 235 pounds, like he's been a little bit too big for a lot of small forwards to cover when he tries to go inside. And if a bigger guy is covering him, he's just quick enough to get past him. He doesn't dominate either matchup, but he's good enough and big enough and physical enough to kind of to contribute in everyone.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that he could do some stuff off the dribble in addition to that, that's always kind of helped offset the fact that his three-point percentages are never, or rarely, I should say, as high as you would like. So shot 35% from three, though, during this stretch in Denver. And when I was doing research for this, I was surprised. I probably thought he was injured more, and maybe I was just getting his availability conflated with Danilo Gallinari's in Denver. I never would have guessed that he is third in minutes played for the Nuggets over this decade. That's one of the things that kind of caught me off guard. And so the fairness factor matters, and then just solid. You know, 2016, 2017, Wilson Chandler especially was just absolutely on one on offense. And so just always a really solid player, and ends up being, you know, looking at the contracts they signed him to, looking at some of the fair weather success that they had during those post-Melo years, like ends up just being like one of those understated pieces that they were able to add, where at least made their team interesting, even though his time with them kind of predates them being really good like they are now for the most part.
I think it's easy to forget just how much time he spent in Denver. He was a part of that Carmelo Anthony trade, and he didn't leave until he joined the Philadelphia 76ers for the 2018-19 season. Like, that's a lot of time spent spanning a number of different mini eras in this franchise's history.
And they just gave him away in that trade, right? Like, they just sent him into Philly's cap space that year. Okay, so yeah. Yeah, he was there. He outlasted Danilo Gallinari, yes? Or did they leave in the same offseason?
I think he outlasted him. think I'm trying to remember my timeline here.
Because Gallo signed with the Clippers in
He did outlast him. He was there one more season. Yeah.
We will get to Gallo though. Who comes after Wilson Chandler?
Coming after Wilson Chandler, we have Will Barton, who was seventh for the fans and who was sixth for you and seventh for me. Sorry, I had to look at my notes there.
Will Barton, I don't know if I'm surprised that he is where he is. Like, I guess maybe personally, I find it low. He's just really, I know he had the injuries last year, and so maybe that holds back his ranking a bit because he comes back and he's just not really ever as effective, but he's been really good and sort of, I respect the almost come out of nowhere-ness coupled with the actual there-ness where his career has really taken off in Denver after coming over from Portland. Someone who, he's not really a properly sized wing, and some of the defensive metrics love him this season. He's been really good defending one-on-one, but I also think that's the product of some of the lineups he plays in, and then he's not going to foul, and so all those things probably weighed into some of those metrics. But when you look at what he can do offensively, like a pretty good catch and shoot guy, he can do some work off the dribble, even if you maybe don't trust his off the bounce jumper. This season specifically, he's getting inside more, can be that secondary playmaker, and so he just fills a lot of holes. And he's sort of like that, the NBA equivalent of like a five tool player, it feels like to me. And then there's also just that electric intangibility about him where, you know, some of the possessions where he's working on the ball, you don't really know what's going to happen. Like, it could end in disaster or it could end in a masterpiece. And, like, I kind of respect that experience a little bit. And I think you can argue, if you're looking at, maybe this is being too recent, but if you're looking at a prospective playoff series for the Nuggets, you could probably make the case, especially this season, given how much Gary Harris has struggled, that he's their third most important player, just because you still need that second face-up weapon aside from Jamal Murray. And if you're not going to lean on Michael Porter Jr. in that capacity, in high volume at this stage, the only other guy that can really generate that type of offense in this rotation is Will Barton.
Agreed. And I kind of think that he's one of the NBA's more overall underrated players. We credit him for his athleticism and transition, for his scoring instincts, for the excitability that you mentioned, because we don't really know what's going to happen. But I do think that his abilities on the defensive end have largely gone overlooked because he's been an offense first player in the past. And more than anything else, I think that he developed an unfortunate and inaccurate reputation as kind of a ball hog who looked for his own shots at the expense of hitting open teammates, of creating for others, when in reality, like, he's consistently developed into a better and better playmaker, with the exception of the injury-riddled 2018-19 season, where he just never really got comfortable. But aside from that, like, he's really done a nice job blossoming into a guy who can really create offense for himself and others on a consistent basis, which is not something that the Denver has a lot of on its roster aside from the stars.
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe his defensive value would be compromised more if he spent less time beside Gary Harris, who's going to take those tougher wing assignments, as my voice just cracks there. But still, yeah, I think you could certainly argue that he might be closer to a net neutral defender than he's received credit for over his career. And then again, the offense that he gives you is even underrated. You know, playing off of Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, it's a luxury, but can also be an adjustment when you're most comfortable working on the ball, which is what Will Barton is, but he works alongside them. You can have those three on the court together and you're just going to bulldoze opposing defenses.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. I wish that he just got a little bit more credit, and I'm glad that you're giving it to him.
And who was after him?
After him, we have another tie. This time, we'll start off with Gary Harris here, who was in a tie for fifth place. He was sixth for the fans. He was sixth for me, and you actually had him up at four, despite this season's struggles.
Really, the past two seasons.
I was going to correct myself too, but you beat me to it.
I think I just appreciate one. You're talking about someone who had one of the least efficient rookie seasons in NBA history, and then all of a sudden turns into this incredibly valuable rotation player. The fact that his three ball really hasn't been falling over the past two seasons, and that even his finishing hasn't been where it was, at least when you're looking at 2017, 2018. It has picked up a little bit this season compared to last year. That's definitely that definitely is a drawback for his case, but I might have considered putting him even higher than I did, to be honest with you, just because of had he been more consistent on offense, just because of the workload that he shoulders on defense for this team. And even when the lineups aren't good defensive lineups, even when the Nuggets haven't been close to average defensive teams, you're talking about someone who's 6'4", not insanely long, who just covers these really tough wings on a regular basis. And I'm not trying to say that he's some elite defender, because the level of difficulty doesn't have to infer ability, but it is evidence of value, because the fact that they can put him on those types of players despite his size, and so that you really get three defensive positions out of Gary Harris, to me is just this huge deal. And I think he's been there now for long enough where you can take into account his there-ness factor, and then we don't have to completely forget about the offensive player that he was two seasons ago, where it looked like this is going to be one of the most dangerous 3-and-D weapons in the league. And he might even be a little bit more than that, because you looked at the chemistry he had off the ball with Nikola Jokic and his ability to duck in to the hoop and finish at the rim. The fact that that's come down over the last season and a half or so, again, it is problematic, but I still think he's done enough in the aggregate to warrant a top four finish for the decade.
So he is fifth in minutes played for the decade. Which I think is important here, because a lack of availability has been one of the primary knocks against him. It seems like it's been a steady stream of minor or nagging injuries that have largely held back his ability to continue the promising development we saw throughout the first 4 years of his right now six-season career. He's only 25 years old. We don't really know which way he's going to trend moving forward. But you know, these last two seasons, I think, maybe unfairly knocked him further down on my list than I expected, just because of the disappointment and the lack of development and regression in so many areas. It's hard to know to what extent those are linked to the injuries that he's worked through. It's important that head coach Mike Malone does seem to implicitly trust his abilities on defense. He does trust him to handle a bunch of different, often tough matchups, but the inability to shoot these last couple of seasons, the lack of finishing ability around the rim, like as you alluded to, like the off-ball work that he did with Jokic, just as a cutter, a backdoor cutter and a finisher around the hoop, like so many of those reverse pick and rolls that they ran ended up being some of the nicest highlights we've seen in the last decade of, you know, under the rim play, you know, the very special or very, very solid plays, as the starters like to put it. It's difficult for me to separate the trajectory from the cumulative value. I think that the cumulative value probably demands higher placement, but because we're looking at their importance to the franchise too, I think that his lack of growth has put more of a cap on their ceiling than we expected, coming off of that magnificent 2017-18 season.
I think that's all fair. Who was he tied with?
He was tied with Kenneth Faried, who was fifth for the fans, fourth for me, and seventh for you. Very much a fan favorite in Denver, the Manimal. Just those thunderous dunks, the energy with which he played. But at the same time, like, you take away those highlights and the fan favoriteness and the there-ness, and I think he was kind of disappointing too, right?
He was one of those players that really just couldn't keep up with the progression of the league's preferred style of play, is really what it was. You look at what he did as a rebounder, a high-energy player, but he was also just never really this incredible play finisher from the ranges where he should have been most affected. But the most damning thing, even more so than kind of this iffy fit on the defensive end, is like for him not to develop really any sort of a jumper where you couldn't necessarily trust him to make shots outside of, you know, the restricted area, or definitely outside of the paint, that ended up being incredibly problematic. And so it sucks when you see a player who was so electrifying early on in his career, that career ends up fizzling out sort of suddenly, where he went from this, maybe it was more gradual in Denver, his decline, then I'm sort of painting it, because it does feel like he got increasingly less important to them, at least during those final couple seasons. But just looking at what he was supposed to be, what that extension was supposed to represent, relative to what he ended up becoming to them, it's disappointing. I don't think that we can penalize him too hard for that, though, because we're just looking at, you know, especially those first few years in Denver, he was the counting stats were good for him. Again, that high energy player who could really get up and down the floor, give you a presence on the glass, even though he wasn't the biggest player. And it was someone they looked to during those interim years as, hey, maybe we actually have this building block. And it turns out that that's not what he was, but the fact that he could incite that sort of thinking, even if only for fleeting seasons, I think it means something. And I mentioned at the top of the podcast, or rather before we started recording, that I was never really the biggest fan of his game, even when he was kind of just churning through double-doubles. Still, I don't think you can ignore the contributions. And me having him at 7, I totally understand why the composite rankings and the fans specifically end up having him higher.
Yeah, I actually had him higher than the fans at 4th as opposed to 5th from the fans. And it was largely because of the fairness factor and just the way that he invigorated the fan base. I do think that matters, especially in a city that its first love is definitely football, and the basketball team struggles to generate coverage even when it's good. And I think that having that fan favorite who brought fans to the Pepsi Center, who made nightly highlight reels, that did matter. Now, then again, like, the Nuggets were consistently less effective with him on the court. It was very easy for opposing teams to run pick and rolls, get him to switch onto them and just abuse him in isolation defense. So it's another case where, like, there are conflicting factors here, but for me, just given the Nuggets' struggle to acquire and maintain relevance in Denver, I wanted to give a little bit more credit to the intangibles here.
Probably the most polarizing player on this list, where I think he could have had the widest scope of ranges, where you could probably easily justify putting him where you did, but I also consider him putting him a little bit lower than 7, which is where I had him.
Excluding Carmelo Anthony, who I think there was some confusion about how much time he spent in Denver this decade, he had the widest range of outcomes from the fan vote. Like, Fareed was as high as second place on some ballots. He was unranked on others, and we didn't really see that complete contrast in outcomes with as many players.
Scientifically proven. There we go. Who's up next?
You cannot argue with that. Up next, we have Jamal Murray at 4th. The fans had him at 3rd, which doesn't surprise me given his importance to the current iteration of these Nuggets. You and I both had him at 5th. I love Jamal Murray's game. I don't think that's any secret at this point. Even when the results haven't been there, you know, just the confidence with which he plays, the form of his jumper, the swagger, the blue arrow celebration, like, all that stuff has made me very convinced that he is going to be an absolute star in this league. I think he's still trending towards getting there. I definitely don't think he's produced like that thus far, but man, like, I've just always loved his game.
Yeah, he has this J.R. Smith gene about him where he can both win you and cost you playoff games. And that happened in the playoffs last year for the Nuggets, but he is still incredibly young. And so the hope can be that the efficiency for him comes up. Still, he's really one of the very few players on this team that can hit an off-the-dribble jumper with any semblance of consistency. I think there's probably untold value in having a point guard who so comfortably just plays off Nikola Jokic, where we've seen probably over the past 2 seasons that, yeah, Murray can lead some of these units on his own, at least on the offensive end, but he's so much better alongside Jokic, and that's not going to happen with a lot of other point guards just because they're going to be so used to working with the ball in their hands. And this year he's shooting a career high on two-pointers. And yeah, there's some variance in his performance, but the fact that you have someone who, like you talked about with his confidence, isn't going to have a problem taking the biggest shot in crunch time, and that this player is still only 23, just turned 23 in February, that's absolutely monstrous for your future. I would not have given him a max extension personally.
I wouldn't have either yet.
Yeah. I would have let that ride out to restricted free agency and dared anybody to give him that type of money over 4 years or even 3. Like, the threat of a shorter deal with a player option wouldn't have scared me as much. But I also respect the investment that the Nuggets are showing in him and then their ability to continue developing him. And I don't think it's impossible that this ends up being an okay contract. You're never going to look at it as a value contract. I think that very seldom happens with max deals, but he still has a chance to live up to that billing. And I was really excited to see and hope we still get to see him in the playoffs, just because I love that. Maybe fans find it more frustrating than not, where there are these vanishing acts down the stretch, but then he can also put you on his back. But I kind of appreciate that variance. Like, I enjoy watching that. And so he's a player that I find just absolutely magnetic.
On November 5th, 2016, with 5 minutes and 14 seconds left in the first quarter, Jamal Murray hit a three-pointer against the Detroit Pistons. And it was notable because he had missed the first 17 shots of his career. And, you know, that's ultimately irrelevant. Like, he's obviously already bounced back to become a valuable offensive player. But I think it kind of speaks to how, from day one, he's also been tasked with filling a role that he wasn't necessarily ready for, just because the lack of playmakers on this Denver team who could create their own shots, because he was simultaneously trying to shore up his ball handling skills, which lagged behind what you might expect from a point guard, while also learning how to play off the ball with Jokic, which is not something we typically see from a one guard. There were so many different hurdles that he's had to overcome throughout his thus far brief career. He only just turned 23, that I think ascending to this point already is a huge positive and gives me even more confidence that we have not yet seen the best from him.
My only recommendation for him would be to maybe watch what he posts on Instagram. Would probably just be,
I'm sure he was just hacked, right?
Yeah, him and Draymond Green both. Look at that, we worked it into a podcast about the Nuggets. My pronunciation of Draymond Green, for anyone who's curious about what we're referencing.
I'm really proud of you.
Guys, are you looking to last longer than the value of a New York Knicks first round draft pick? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE.
Number three for the Nuggets. Who was it?
No one, because we had another tie. This time, a two-way tie for second place. One of the two people tied was fourth for the fans. He was second for both of us, and that was Ty Lawson. Lawson's career in Denver did not end on the highest of notes after multiple DUI arrests. I think they chose to part ways with him when it was clear. I believe that, if I remember correctly, he was also frustrated by them choosing another point guard in the draft and had like a video during the draft of him complaining or something.
That point guard
was Jamal Murray.
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to finish my sentence, but I guess we're not that in sync just yet.
We're trying. We're getting there. But yeah, I mean, what he did before the unfortunate ending to his Denver tenure was pretty impressive. Like, I feel like he's one of those guys who we've largely forgotten just how good and explosive he was on offense. Like, a consistent 2010 threat, one of the better passers in the league, blindingly fast. Just all of that. Like, he was there before Denver really became a true contender again, if you would consider them that now. But he made those interim Nuggets teams really fun.
Just an absolute bullet off the dribble, so quick. And you look at his size, 5'11", and the fact that he was better than a coin toss finisher around the rim, just knowing really how to put, you know, if he's going to put more arc on his shots or just really figuring out how to keep defenders on tilt so that he's not being as heavily contested around the rim, just really scary to face. And his peak, I mean, you look at the four seasons in Denver, he spent much longer than that there, a total of six seasons in Denver, but the four seasons between 2011 and 2015, 16.4 points per game, 8 assists, hit 48.4% of his twos, and shot almost 36% from three. He could be a legitimate engine for an above-average offense, and just when we were first going through this, I had just forgotten how good he was, because that's how far removed we seem from peak Ty Lawson. He hasn't played in the NBA since 2017 when he was on the Kings, so I think it's probably easy to forget how good he was, but when he was good, he was damn good.
one of the better players we've seen without an all-star appearance, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I was trying to look up where he is in like win shares among players with no all-star appearances this decade. He's only 34th, but I think that's a little unfair just because we're limiting we're extending the time frame beyond when his career ended. So if we isolate that to 2010-11 through 2016-17, even including the period in which he declined for other organizations, still 11th among non-All-Stars in win shares, which is pretty solid when he's not playing for these contenders. Like, you know, we see Serge Ibaka and Marcin Gortat and George Hill and David West are on that list. Like those kind of guys who might not have been as important to their teams as Lawson was as the unquestionable offensive engine with the Nuggets. But yeah, I mean, still obviously provided a lot of value without really getting too much respect for those efforts.
Second in wins above replacement for the Nuggets in this decade too. And that's nothing to slouch at.
It is not.
Who was he tied with?
He was tied with Danilo Gallinari.
Because I couldn't decide who to put at two. I ultimately went with Lawson, but it was a struggle.
We both had the same thought process, I think, because I also was trying to figure out how I wanted to order those two at two and three and ended up with Gallo at number three. The fans did the reverse. They had those two at two and three, but Gallo did come out ahead at number two. Maybe he would have been a guaranteed second place finisher if he hadn't torn his ACL in Denver, but it was like the injury prone knock was always what held him back, even though he was so obviously a really excellent offensive player, one of the better shooters that we've seen in a while, capable of creating, capable of shooting over anyone, an underrated defender before the injuries kind of sapped some of his athleticism. But there was a time when he was first coming over as the centerpiece of the return in the Carmelo Anthony deal that he was like, he was a semi-lockdown defender in addition to being a reliable scorer.
What I respect most about his game, you know, you mentioned what Ty Lawson's value is compared to others who haven't made an All-Star game. Danilo Gallinari, I would imagine, has to be up there too. Would probably be higher than number 34 on that list. But what I most appreciate about his game, even as time goes on and it's sort of changed a little bit, whereas you mentioned, with all the injuries, he's definitely not as explosive as he once was. He blurs the line between primary scorer and complement. His shot profile is inclusive. Like, it's heavy on spot-up opportunities, but dotted with these, like, reliable self-creation looks. And he has a penchant for getting to the free throw line. And that's part of what makes him such an efficient offensive weapon. He showed that time and again in Denver. He carried it over to the Clippers. He showed it again with the Thunder. There's that level of consistency there. What really hurts him is just the availability. Had he been healthier in Denver, you know, we're talking about someone who I think probably would have been my inarguable number two. But just someone who is so effectively able to straddle that line between, hey, we do need you to create your own offense, but you're also going to have to play off not just some people, but a bunch of different people, and you still have to be really impactful. I respect it. I've used the word respect a lot in this podcast, but Danilo Gallinari is probably one of the more underrated players of this specific era. And I think that there's a case if you wanted to tell me that, hey, he belongs over Ty Lawson and you really shouldn't be waiting, you know, minutes played or that type of a sample, I might not provide you with that much pushback because I do think that he was closer to stardom in Denver than Ty Lawson was. Maybe by a hair, or maybe I'm even wrong just because Ty Lawson had more control over the offense as the primary passer. But Danilo Gallinari is just, he's still so damn good. And his time in Denver, you know, that Melo trade, when you trace back all the branches to what they ended up receiving for it, I don't know if you would say that he's a worthwhile centerpiece because they didn't have a ton of success with him there, but he was just still really good, really solid. And even now, it was like that while he was in Denver, and then even now he probably typifies what we mean when we say a fringe all-star. Like, that's the type of player that he is.
So speaking of fringe all-star, I've really found that I enjoy putting you on the spot during these during these episodes. So we're gonna do it again. Gallo is ninth place in win shares from 2010-11 through the present among players with zero all-star appearances. Can you name the rest of the top 10?
Oh, no. I wouldn't even be able to begin to do that. Are they players that have, like, little experience where they didn't really have a chance to make an all-star appearance just yet?
Just looking through the list, I think there are three guys who should have been All-Stars if the NBA did what it should and expanded the rosters a little bit to match the growing numbers of players in the league as we've had more teams and more guys cycling through roster spots. The rest are like high-end role players who have been very good for at least some portion of the decade.
So how many am I trying to name?
All 10. I've spotted you one with Gallo.
All right, Gallo. Mike Conley has to be on there.
He is number two.
Tobias Harris?
Tobias Harris is down at 18.
All right. I should probably just stop there because I'm already running out of names. Gordon Hayward, did he ever make an All-Star appearance?
He did in Utah.
Oh, right. Some disrespect being thrown at Gordon Hayward from me. What about Lou Williams?
Lou Williams is number 10.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did Jrue Holiday make it? He did. He made an All-Star appearance.
He did with Philly, right?
Yeah.
It was like 2011-12 right before they'd moved him, I think.
I'm already running out of names here. Did Eric Bledsoe make an All-Star appearance?
He did not, but he's down at 25th.
Wow, I'm really bad at this exercise. I feel like you just need to...
Do you want me to just put you out of your misery here?
Yes.
Number one is Serge Ibaka.
Okay.
Number two is Mike Conley. Number three is George Hill. Number four is Marcin Gortat. Number five is Derek Favors. Six is J.J. Redick. Seven is Jonas Valanciunas.
Ooh.
Eight is Greg Monroe. And then you got 9 and 10, which were Danilo Gallinari and Lou Williams.
Wow, Greg Monroe.
Greg Monroe. Yeah, I mean, like the Pistons.
Can you tell me how old Greg Monroe is, by the way?
Greg Monroe is still only like 28, right?
29. 29 in June.
Okay.
Boy,
I was closer than you were on your trivia question.
That was a hard. I never would have gotten Gortat. That's never.
Yeah,
a name
definitely,
that I would have
definitely
thought
not Gortat. I was surprised you didn't get Serge.
That seems like a fairly obvious one.
So speaking of fairly obvious, number one in our composite rankings was, drumroll here, Nikola Jokic. You surprised? Stunned? Oh. Shocked? Flabbergasted?
I'm a little bit surprised because I just feel like Randy Foy was staring people right in the face. And the fact that they didn't pick him.
No one gave Randy Foy a single vote.
Wow. Randy Foy was 11th in minutes played for the Nuggets this decade.
And I believe that he hit a buzzer beater in double overtime or something to win one game like 5 years ago.
Yeah, he deserved at least a vote, a straggler.
But no.
I don't know what to say about Jokic. He's the best passing big man in league history. What he can do and just some of the dimes that he drops is just wild. You look at the full court heaves that he could throw and just hit guys, and it's just they always seem to be on point. Those just one-handed dimes that he drops. He's an incredibly talented scorer, too. I know his three-point percentage has waxed and waned during his time in Denver, but he is an authentic threat from beyond the arc. The way that he can really just finesse but also bully his way to the basket. He can move with the ball in his hands and put it on the floor a little bit. He's not going to face up Anthony Davis style, but he does have that bandwidth in his offensive game. He is right now I'd say he's a top five, no lower than a top seven player in the NBA. And he's someone who should probably finish in that area on the MVP ballot. And I just don't know what could be said about him that just hasn't already been said. Just one of the most valuable players in the game right now. And the fact that, you know, you end up getting him with the number 41 pick, that's going to go down as one of the best second round picks in NBA history. I'm trying to think of who would definitely be in front of him right now. You have Manu Ginobili is going to be there. Do you put Draymond Green in front of him? But he's going to go down as easily one of the, I would say, between 3 and 5 best second round picks in NBA history, unless I'm forgetting someone just super glaring.
All right, so give me a second to climb up on my soapbox here. So we need to address the people who still want to say that Jokic is a bad defender. I think that is the only remaining misconception about his game, and it stems from his inability to stop guards in isolation when he switched onto them, and he doesn't really block a lot of shots or serve as a primary rim protector. But the Nuggets are consistently far better on defense with him on the court. And just watch a Nuggets game and focus only on him. Don't watch the ball. Don't watch whoever's dribbling. Don't watch where it's passed to. Just focus on Jokic, and you see how much he does in between those terminuses of offensive possessions. He consistently deters passing lanes. He consistently makes the right rotations. And those things matter so much, in addition to his growing communication on that end of the floor. Like, I don't think that he needs to be a player who is talked about as an offensive powerhouse who is a defensive liability, because he has consistently proven that that is not the case. And it really hasn't been the case, even dating back to the early portions of his career. He's slow. He's not traditionally athletic, but he is an effective defensive player.
It's a great way. He's not traditionally athletic. I like it. Look, he's...
Well, I think he does a lot of things that deserve to be counted as athleticism. I mean, you've seen the water polo inspired rebound and quick passes where he doesn't even have to touch the ball with a second hand. Like, that kind of stuff, the coordination, those are all examples of athleticism. It's just not run fast, jump high.
Right. I totally agree with you. He's also someone that looks like he very much enjoys the off seasons, and that's something that I can appreciate. But
good for him.
To your point,
go play with your horses in Serbia.
Or there was the video that surfaced where he was just like shirtless dancing like in the woods or something.
Good for him.
But anyway, to your point on his defense, what I think people also forget is there is value in ending possessions with a rebound. And Nikola Jokic is a good defensive rebounder. So he's limiting second chance opportunities while he's on the floor. And look, there's a lot of just noise. Ben Taylor has done a great job on this, talking about the real value of offensive rebound, of rebounding in general. But there's still value in making sure opponents don't get second looks on the offensive end. He helps with that element. And then also, and you kind of talked about this, he has the IQ to kind of work in these like more aggressive schemes that the Nuggets had tried out. I think probably more prevalent last season than this season. Like, he just has the length where he can get up on guys and, you know, maybe it burns you time and again, but he's going to get in there and force some steals, poke away some balls, really party crash passing lanes by doing that. I don't know that that makes him this incredibly valuable defender, but to call him this outright liability now, it's misinformation at this point.
I do think that the number of people who are still buying into that is diminishing. It's just not as small as it should be.
If this is a sign of progress, it wasn't even something that I thought about talking about before. He, addressing his defense. So the fact that you brought it up, it still matters, clearly, but it, like you said, it's a diminishing stance.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think the most compelling conversation about Jokic is not really his place within the current league-wide hierarchy or his defense, but it's really like, is he going to be the best player in this franchise's history? I mean, Dan Issel, Alex English, Fat Lever, Dikembe Mutombo, like there have been Bobby Jones, David Thompson, like there have been some big names throughout history, but you have to think like the fact that he is on pace to spend his entire career here, and I'm certain that the front office is going to want to keep him in Denver as long as possible. And the trajectory that he's on, that is unquestionably a Hall of Fame trajectory, I feel like it's pretty hard to argue against him definitely not yet being there, but being on pace to take the gold home for this franchise just in the last decade.
The way he plays, since the future is going to weigh heavily in what you just said, it looks like it should age well, his style. Like maybe he really becomes a defensive problem for the Nuggets as he gets older, but just what he does on offense, I feel like that should all age well for him, just based on the way he plays.
It's like Arvydas Sabonis is probably a good comparison here, where, you know, he came to the NBA as a 31-year-old, and deep into his 30s, he was still an obviously effective offensive player just because he was a brilliant passer. He was a capable shooter from mid-range, even extending it out to three-point range sometimes. And I think that's the floor for an older version of Jokic. It's not like he runs the floor well already. Maybe he won't be fast enough to get some of those frustration fouls that he gets that hold him back now.
Yeah, maybe he's not leading as many fast breaks, but like you said, he could just do those one-handed rebound catches, just throw it down court, actually save himself some energy, maybe. He doesn't have to get up and down the floor. Honorable mentions. Let's get into them.
Yeah, I thought this was cool because there were fewer of them than we've seen with other teams, and I think it's a testament, as counterintuitive as it initially seems, I think the lack of depth in the honorable mentions was a testament to the quality of the options at the back end of the top 10. Just because it didn't seem like people were scrambling for names to fill out the back of their ballot like we've been doing with the Charlotte Hornets or the Atlanta Hawks. We only had 26 different players receive votes. We've gone over all of them that were in the top 10. So we had Chauncey Billups at 11, which I think is valid to give him some credit. Assuming I have my timeline right, I don't think he spent much time in Denver during this decade, right?
No, he came over in
Did he spend any?
Wasn't he traded? Yeah, he's traded.
He was in the Melo trade. So similar to Melo there. We had Andre Iguodala at 12, who I really had trouble picking between him and Aflalo for my 10th spot, just because of how important he was to that 57-win team that was setting records at home, that went to the playoffs. But then the way he exited and joined the Golden State Warriors right after they beat him, I don't think he made fans within the Denver fan base with that move. So it was tough for me to put him in because of the intangibles there. And I don't know if you had a similar struggle.
I didn't have that same struggle, but everyone's mad at Kevin Durant for doing it. Andre Iguodala had the first go to the Warriors heel turn.
After a Steph hug too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after Iggy, we had Aaron Aflalo at 13. We've already talked about him. We had Kenyon Martin at 14. We had Andre Miller at 15. We had Nene Hilario at 16. We had Allen Iverson, who did not play during this decade, at 17. Didn't just not play for the Nuggets, but didn't play in the NBA in general. But Allen Iverson is awesome and embraces the new generation of players and supports them. And therefore, I think it's valid that we're supporting him here. I like that he got a vote.
Way to finesse that in there.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a bit of a stretch, but I'll take it. In a tie for 18th, we have Malik Beasley, which I want to be clear that I did not vote for Malik Beasley. This is not my doing. This was other people. And then he was tied with Mason Plumlee. Are you surprised by either of those?
Not really. I'm surprised that Monte Morris didn't end up number one on your ballot, but carry on.
I thought about it, but then I had to knock him down. So we had a big tie for 20th. Michael Porter Jr., who seems pretty certain to climb further up this list moving forward. Costa Kufis was also tied for 20th with Jameer Nelson, Marcus Camby, and Evan Fournier, who I thought would be a little bit higher as well. And then tied for 25th, we had Monte Morris and Timofey Mozgov.
No Al Harrington love.
But yeah, I mean, like, just looking at these guys, like, you know, I can see arguments for having Nene, for having Aflalo, which we did, for having Mason Plumlee, for having Malik Beasley, maybe even Morris and Mozgov, who was pretty valuable. I mean, valuable enough that he inked the Albatross contract in 2016 because of what he did in Denver.
Yeah,
they traded him for multiple first-round picks.
Yeah, if you look at, let's say, the players who rank 50th or better in minutes played for the Nuggets this decade, there's just a lot of names that stand out. And you look and say, well, they were a good NBA player, and the Nuggets actually had them while they were good. Just a lot of rock solid talent across the board here for Denver.
I think it's because their worst season was 30-52. You know, they haven't
it's the Knicks
really
best
been
season.
In That's their best season, but is in progress.
Yeah. No, I said the Knicks best season is 30.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's one of just the more probably underrated talent farms in the NBA when you're just looking at franchises. I mean, some of these, they didn't groom all of these guys when you're going up and down the list, but Evan Fournier is someone who was really good with the Nuggets before he ends up in Orlando. So there's just, I'm looking at these names that rank 50th or better minutes again, and so many stand out as, oh, hey, they were good basketball players. Not only were they good basketball players, but they weren't these nobodies when they were in Denver for the most part.
A lot of talent here. This is a fun one to try to figure out, just because there were so many legitimate options throughout the ballot.
Yes, this was fun. When we resume, we will be on to the Detroit Pistons, which I imagine will be less fun, but I haven't gotten into the research for it yet.
Yeah, so, I think we're going to have to talk a lot about Andre Drummond.
Yeah, that's going to be rough. So until next time, please remember to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and on YouTube as well. It's Hardwood Knox in both instances. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, I leave you with a shout out to Denver Nuggets legend, Gary Forbes.